Hey, Roberto, we are here to talk season 4, episode 4, but more importantly, we are here to talk about how you were so right, and it was so hard for me to control myself last week. How you doing, Roberto?
So I'm not a, you know, prideful man. I'm not a boastful man. I am not one to not, you know, to toot my own horn. But there is no better feeling than watching a piece of fiction, and as a creative person to know how the team is going to go, and to see that happen in real time is amazing.
I last week you totally gave your analysis of Lucas and said how you hoped the story would go, how you wanted this character to go, and do you know how hard it was for me to say, wait, just one more episode?
Because, you know, and for those who are curious what the heck we're talking about, and by the way, we are talking about Season 4, Episode 4, Chapter 43.
Chapter 43, correct.
Sorry, 43, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm making sure that that's there. And for those who are not aware of what I do, hi, I'm Roberto Vegas, and I tend to actually watch it episode for episode. So, I'm not, you know, Jackie's already watched the whole season and kind of understands the pipeline, but I'm sort of the person doing it episode for episode. So last week when we did the last two chapters, or the first two ones, and kind of combined them, it was such a weird thing of like, yeah, I see where this character's going to go because that's the most interesting thing so far. I will say as a criticism of this episode, really quickly, I wish they would have, I hope, because I didn't see the next episode either, I kind of hope they flash back a bit, because I want to see how Lucas got to where he did. I wish they would have, like, kind of cut to him more, and, like, had him become this, you know, like, where he buys the gun, and has that stuff. Because I know it was going to happen, and I know that pin was going to happen, but I wish they had maybe developed it more, but that might happen in the series for all I know.
Yeah. So I guess, and also we answered the question, is he going to be working with Gavin? Because we you know, those were two that of the same sort of...
It only goes, like, if you take a shot, you know, if you take a pot shot at the president, that only goes down one way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes down one of two ways. But you take a pot shot at the president, you're taking a bullet. And I am so glad that it got the point of, like, I wish he had screamed, this is for...
I'm doing this for you, Zoe!
I wish he would have screamed it. I wish, if nothing more than that, because, what I will say about the series, I do like the fact that that the team at Netflix has somehow, like, gotten so buddy up with certain people. Like, I love that we have Wolf Blitzer, you know, having to, you know, be Wolf Blitzer, essentially, and talk about Lucas as a real threat.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things of when you do that in fiction, when you blur the lines. Like, I remember I think it was Skyfall that they had done it in the James Bond films, where Wolf Blitzer came out, was talking, like, you know, about the bombing that happened in that movie. And it was so cool to see Blitzer. It's like, if you look at the picture, the cell phone footage, it looks like Lucas, and this is this story or whatever, and I can see already where we're going to go down this pipeline of things, because, you know, we already kind of got the hint this episode, since we're talking about Lucas already, we already got the hint of the fact that Dunbar is, you know, questioning things and trying to figure out what's truth and what's false, and I think this is going to accelerate that even more.
Yeah, she's not going to come out of this looking pretty, is she?
No, it's so interesting and so crazy of things, because I just, like, I like it, I'm so glad Lucas went down this pipeline, and I'm glad we got rid of it quickly. I wish we'd given him an episode, if nothing more than...
To watch his fall from sanity
fall from grace, fall from sanity, because again... The thing is, the reason that triggers it is that, you know, the beauty part, a lot of, you know, any character has a tragic flaw, whether it be a villain, whether it be a hero or whatever it is. And seeing that, the beauty part of it is that you see where if he just kind of let it go, if he had just walked away, he would be fine. And I wish we could have seen him either struggle with that or just go down that, that path, because it's just such a, you know, him doing the shot was surprising, and was, you know, like, oh crap, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. It was more of a, like, for me, it was like, yes, it happened. And I had to kind of make sure, like, did I miss something in the episode? Did they develop this? And I kind of rewound it back, and, you know, so I was kind of watching and sort of, you know, doing something at the same time. And I was like, did I miss something? So I rewound the episode, looked back, and there was, like, no development. So I was like, I kind of wish we had had that, because it would have been so interesting to see Lucas, you know, acquire a gun and have to kind of wrestle with everything and justify that what he was doing was right, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know, he could have involved another character, maybe.
He didn't even have to. Like, it would almost...
Well, there's the, I forgot his name, gosh. The guy who was the main editor of the Washington Herald. I guess he's not anymore. But, you know, he was sort of his chief with over Zoe and...
Yeah, but we had seen that happen. We saw that bridge kind of destroyed the last season when he had approached him.
Yeah.
And he's like, just let it go. And you know, he was trying to convince him to not go, you know. Because, the biggest problem with
I'm
Lucas.
I'm sort of talking ahead, too, probably.
that's fine. I mean, the biggest problem with Lucas was that he didn't let it go. And, you know, and to his you know, inevitable demise. But I wish we could have seen a little bit more of him struggle with the idea of taking matters in his own hand. Even if it was just in his own head, it doesn't have to be necessarily as complex as he sees another thing and starts, you know, hallucinating something or another. I don't think he's going to have a psychotic break, but I do like the idea of if we were just given him more time and done something we don't typically do in the series, which is, you know, have an episode without Claire and Frank Underwood and team in it, where we just had a solid episode with Lucas. I think that might have made for a really cool story of just, you know, focus on this man for the whole episode, or as the A story, and do something different with the story and things. Again, only because I'm kind of getting tired of the Underwoods as a thing.
I understand.
Again, it would have been cool.
And I was actually very happy that it did move quickly, because I sort of I don't know. I think it's just because I'm watching too many shows, but I want things to move very quickly these days. But something that has never gotten its full due or attention, a character that in the past I have said, well, at some point we need to talk about him because he's completely related to Frank and Claire. But rest in peace, Meacham. We've had nothing to say about him.
Well, I mean, it's funny that we talk about
him. And now he's gone.
Well, yeah. It's, you know, one thing we've brought up in the past a lot is the idea of loyalty in this show, and who's loyal and who's not loyal, and who's out for themselves and who's out for the team, so to speak. And I'm glad that in the end, you know, when – because, you know, at the time – you know, to Frank's perspective, he doesn't know who leaked what information. I mean, we know that it was Seth that leaked the you know, tried to play Meacham against it, everything else, and tried to, you know, fake loyalty versus whatever, because that's, you know, Seth is not about that. And we even see that in this episode, that he's not about loyalty. He's about, you know, himself and out for gain.
His insurance, basically.
And insurance, yeah. That's
For the next administration, because administrations
are going to change.
He could care
less who he works for. It's just a matter – it's a paycheck in the end. He's no different than Remy was in the early days, but, you know, kind of that's changed. But what's interesting is that, you know, because, again, this is something we don't talk about but every Secret Service member that is on the detail, you know, protecting the president is trained to take a bullet. And that's kind of a hard thing to discuss on a fictional level. It's like, how do you have a character? How do you convince an audience that this random agent, this random person, is going to take a bullet for Frank Underwood? And what I liked about what they've done with the character, what they did with the character, is that there's a reason why you could see him taking the bullet and him taking the shot and him doing everything that he did to you know, because he without hesitation fired the gun. It wasn't like, you know, it was just instinct. You know, you saw him just duck down, fire, you know, shoot at Lucas, empty what you need to empty. Like it was, there was no hesitation. There wasn't any freeze. There wasn't any of that. It was just a gut reaction. And it was really cool to see that be Meacham's kind of last moments, because he had been this character that had been sort of brought into the Underwood world, as a loyal, you know, whatever. But it's, you know, you see that that would be the nature of his character. But yeah, that's how he would go out. He would go out protecting Frank.
Yeah, and actually, it's funny. When I rewatched it last night, I was pausing that scene where he gets shot, just to kind of, you know, because everything kind of moves quickly. And it's funny that this has nothing to do with what would be reality. I know that all Secret Service agents in that situation would jump on top of the president and do their duty and go down. But if you go back and look at it, it's really only Meacham that gets in the way and does anything. These other guys, you see them kind of go off. They, like, it's obvious the shooter is right in front of them. And then, but these, I guess these actors are, you know, are told to go off to the side. And it, I thought it was kind of, the way it was shot was kind of silly, but I guess it was the point that you wanted, they really wanted to show it, you, or have the audience see Meacham really make the effort and to his last dying breath shoot those last bullets to kill Lucas. But
absolutely. And that, you know, that's what I think, that is true to his character and true to what he was. And that's why I'm glad that, you know, if Frank, which, I mean, Frank's going to pull through because we, you know, the rest of the season has to go on. Well, he has to, else the show ends. Or the show completely takes a turn, which would be, again, intriguing, but, you know, that ain't going to happen. You know, you're not going to have...
We're not going to have a season six.
You're not going to kill Spacey until there's another season.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Spacey dies at the end, but you're not going to kill Frank Underwood until you've confirmed that you've beat this, you know, train down the road.
Right.
But I am glad, like I said, that if you're going to kill a character off, you know, in that kind of way, that you kill him off in a very spectacular, in a very meaningful way that the character would do, you know, especially in this case. Because if you're going to kill him off with the idea of having a broken character of Lucas shoot, you know, shoot the president, which was such a, you know, I can't believe I telegraphed that so well. I'm glad that we have, you know, that we have, like, Meacham who died to it, because that to me, at least, if, you know, when Prank pulls through, that he'll say, like, what happened to Meacham? And it's like, well, he passed away. He shot it. You know, he died protecting you. And that'll sort of reassure him that it was not Meacham was the one that leaked the information. And he'll know kind of who he has to go against and who it was that he can't trust, based on the idea of, like, if the guy had leaked the information, why would he have taken the bullet? Why would he have
right.
fired?
We're not going to see Seth jump in front of a gun.
Right, exactly. And that's the point. That's what's interesting about this, that I can see going down the line of, like, this is where...
Stamper might.
No, that's the thing. Stamper would. And that's, you know, there are some interesting things with Stamper that I do want to talk about when we get to there, but we still got to have to get through through some stuff there. But I just want to make sure we talked about, you know, at the top of the show, all that stuff, because it's...
Well, it is the main part of the show. And actually, you know, that was funny that I thought, when I went back to watch it last night, I knew what this episode was, which is why, you know, I was thinking we should break it down the way we did the first couple episodes of our show. But I really thought the episode ended with Frank getting shot. And then as I was going back, I realized, wow, it's right in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
But I just felt like that was really the only thing about this episode that...
Well, because it would have ended that way if that were the focus. What's interesting about this, and we should probably start moving into that next, is how Claire got back into the story and what this episode actually gives a little bit more insight into Claire's character. And I have theories as to what she's doing and why she's doing it.
Why don't we talk about our sponsor first?
Yeah, before we get into crazy things, let's actually talk about our sponsor, that being, of course, 100TB.com. This is, of course, for your U.S. people out there. If you're there in the U.K., we apologize. We're sorry. We're very, very sorry, but this is a U.S. service only. Biggest thing about them is that they are actually this kind of cool hosting provider. They actually have crazy deals. They do things from virtual private servers to CDNs to even like bare metal servers for the cost they have, and it's actually pretty crazy cheap. I mean, given, yes, it looks pricey in server land, yeah, you could say, wow, that's a very big cost, but for what they're giving you and for how they're giving you, the cost is actually very reasonable. So if you would, head on over to 100tb.com and give them support, because they support us here at the British Tech Network.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so, you know, but before we move into the Claire thing, that one thing that I have to point out is, you know, as a historian, sort of,
yeah.
or at least went to grad school for it, that, you know, and I think this is something that most popular culture knows of the reference that when Claire, well, not about House of Cards, but when Claire was on the phone with Blythe, and Blythe was wondering how she was doing, how she was holding up, and
right.
and said, you know, is there anything I can do for you? And she says, and I wrote it down, but I guess I don't have to give the exact quote. She said, oh, I appreciate the thought, but I'm sure you have a lot more to take care of right now. Is there anything I can do for you? That is obviously pulled because they want to compare Claire and Frank with FDR and Roosevelt. That's the same conversation that Eleanor had with Truman when Truman became president. He asked Eleanor, can I come down? What can I do? Actually, I think he was in person because they flew him out immediately. Right. You know, so they are not, I'm sorry, but they are not FDR and Roosevelt. As much as the show wants to,
I don't know. Maybe they are. Maybe there's some crazy stuff that we don't know about FDR. Maybe Franklin did some stuff that we don't quite know about.
He was quite the politician, which is what made him successful. Although he was a guy of big ideas and big things, it wasn't it was the people around him. That was the key to FDR.
One could argue that America Works is a very big and bold idea and stuff. Again, I say that in a very candid tone because I don't know anything about FDR's private life. For all we know, he could have been into really freaky stuff. You know, we'll never know until someone writes
it. He was a ladies' man.
Maybe, you know what I'm saying? You never know. You don't know. And that's sort of the thing of, like, you know, I'm not going to say that. But let's talk about that, because the big thing, and they actually make a point of this, and I want to make sure I state this, when Frank gets shot, who is it that delivers the first news thing before Blitzer?
I don't know his name. I don't know.
I know he's a famous one. I'm gonna have to look this up really quick.
Yeah, I don't
want to make sure.
But yeah, there's a lot of detail. It was very reminiscent of when Reagan was shot. They gave the public a lot of details of exactly where the bullet went, how Reagan would be operated on, how long it would take, how many minutes, how many seconds.
Because, like, at that point in time, and then this is sort of, you know, and this is why I want to know who did it, because it was very much because when you think about presidents getting shot, I mean, even if it's a fictional thing, and we could talk about that way, I mean, Kennedy always comes up, you know, as this assassination attempt, the assassination.
And well,
always
yeah. what goes the one that actually worked, or, you know, the one that actually resulted
and,
in
and
death.
So I think that a lot of times that anytime those sort of things happen is that you
I guess the difference with Kennedy and Reagan was that Reagan was almost bigger than the O.J. trial, except that the O.J. situation lasted for a couple of years, while Reagan's assassination attempt was, you know, a few days, and then we knew he was going to be okay.
Right, but that's the point being is that that's sort of where that, because I think they make a very point of it in that opening thing as we're doing the sequence of kind of people finding the news out, which I thought was a really good sequence. Having the news report as sort of the back audio and seeing everyone sort of get the news and seeing the reaction. Because even you saw Seth react in a very interesting way. But seeing like Doug was just, you know, completely.
I thought he was going to lose it. Poor guy.
Oh, yeah. No, he was. He probably would have. And it was, again, a very interesting sequence of events.
And I did like that. I did like that because I think first you saw Claire, and Claire's reaction was definitely shock and disbelief. But it was a little bit, I think of all of them, we saw Seth, we saw Stamper, and then we saw Seth, well, Stamper tell Seth, and then we saw Blythe, them go to Blythe and tell him. And, you know, but it was really, I think the most honest, sort of sincere concern came from Stamper of all of them. And then maybe Blythe, and then maybe Claire.
Right. So, you know. By the way, the news anchor was Charlie Gibson, or Charles Gibson.
Okay.
ABC, the former ABC news anchor
okay.
that was doing it. And it says here, like, some of the New York Times actually writes that it's very much, you know, reminding of the fact that it was, like, the Ronald Reagan assassination. Because mm-hmm. I think Charles Gibson was still part of ABC News. I think, I'm certain he was during,
the Reagan.
You know, I guarantee, like, if you look up Charlie Gibson, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And I knew who that was. It's like, I can't remember his name. But, yeah, he was the ABC News anchor for a good majority of stuff. He's on Good Morning, you know, Good Morning America.
Sure.
So he was, it's really, you know, World News Tonight with Charles Gibson, you know, till 2009. So it's interesting that I'm like, I when I saw him, it was like really kind of a cool moment to see him be the one on a fictional level do that. Cause I thought it was really a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting about this is kind of what we're seeing Claire do at the very end. And I don't know what I almost feel like Claire, there's something going on, but I don't know which side she's playing for.
You mean when she comes in to help Blythe out, make that decision about the Russians?
Yes, because it was completely out of left field, and I don't know if that is what she would do, or if she's trying to sabotage it, because she makes a very poignant thing when Doug says, you know, that's not what the president wants. She states that's what the acting president wants to do, though. That's what the acting president's doing.
Which technically, well, not technically, but which in reality is not reality either. It's her. She's basically in charge of Blythe. Blythe is going to she approached him in a way that everyone else who was at his ear did not, and he completely respects her opinion. She fell into a really good position there, particularly if she wants to be vice president. She's certainly proving her ability to.
That's one. But part of me goes. See, the problem is I don't know what side she's playing on. I don't know. Like again, part of it assumes that Frank is going to be alive, and that she's doing this as either a way of saying, "Look, I did something successful. You know, let me be VP." But she also might be giving him bad advice to say, well, he didn't do a great job and he needs VP. He should vote for me. Like, I don't know what her angle is yet because, you know, even the idea of, you know, let's even say something crazy and say Frank dies just for sake of argument. No, that's not going to happen, but let's just say for sake of argument. She could be just hedging her bets at the same time of saying, well, if Frank dies, this guy's will be the new president. I should, you know, buddy up to him and become the VP.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my crazy, you know, thinking. Cause I don't know what side she's playing. I don't know where her loyalties lie anymore. I know where Doug's lie. We definitely knew where Meacham's, lied. I don't know, and we know where how Seth is. I don't know Claire because that last statement of that's what the acting president. I go, does that mean her? Does that mean him? Does that mean that she's doing this to screw things over? I don't quite know, and I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, I think she's just able to take this crisis and use it towards what she wants, and she wants to be president. She wants if it's Frank that becomes president, she wants it to be a partnership. She wants to be co-president with him. She wants that marriage that they have to continue to be a partnership of power, and she wants to. So she's just stepping up the way she has always sort of viewed this partnership with Frank. Whether or not Frank would involve the Chinese, which was her decision or not, that doesn't matter to her. She is the acting president. I think she does, but I think she does see herself as the acting president.
Right. And the thing is, it's more of it's because again, at the end, you know, the VP is going to get the credit or the you know, the blame. And I'm really wondering if you know, how it's going to be spun in the end. And that's sort of what I don't know yet is how one side's going to spin it. Because at the end, you know, Claire still wants VP, still wants something. She was about to, you know, before everything went off, she was about to announce the divorce and move on. And then this happened. And then she completely changed everything and changed all that stuff. And so I'm wondering how she's spinning this to her advantage, because I'm starting to realize that the reason why the Underwoods work as well as they do is because they both are roughly the same person and they're both roughly the same side of the coin. They just kind of approach it from different ways and they manipulate people differently, you know, whereas Frank tends to get, you know, when he's unhinged, gets really unhinged. And Claire, when she is, she tends to manipulate people without, I think, them even realizing it and understanding this week. Again, I don't know how she's playing this yet. And that's sort of where I'm intrigued with her.
And it definitely seems like this could be a big turning point for them, or not. Or, well, in some way it's going to change things that Frank has been shot. However, you know, there's something I didn't really pick up on my first time through that I paid a close attention to this time, which is right before he's shot by Lucas. She is at her home or her mother's house in Texas, and there's a lockdown, a safety lockdown, and they even turn off the cell phone service in the area. So she's stuck, and it's the president's order, or at least that's what we're led to believe.
Right.
Because the president is ultimately in charge of the Secret Service, and she can't bypass that at all. So then it quickly moves into the scene where he's showing up at the speech at Hammond University to give that speech, and then he's shot. So I thought, oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe this is the case, because if he was shot, Secret Service would jump all over all of the other, you know, the First Lady, her family, and try to protect them, because we don't know who this person is and why he's...
And honestly, this would be actually within line of the story, because a lot of times... as a stylistic choice, they tend to play with time a lot. Like for example, you see many times the speeches of Frank. He'll be giving, you know, present time is giving the speech, but he'll flash back very consciously to when he was writing the speech or figuring out what he wanted to say and actively flash between the two areas, even though they're both separate periods of time. So that would even make sense if that it happened. It could theoretically have flashed back to that point of that and then kind of come back, because it was very quickly of her sitting down. And that, you know, and then being, you know, informed that the president is shot.
And she's still sitting there on those steps when she finds out.
Right. So that's,
I went back, and as I was watching it the second time, I noticed as Frank and Meacham walk up to the crowd to start shaking hands, he says, he asks Meacham, any news? And he says, everything's taken care of. And before that, we see them in the White House, and he calls Meacham in. Because he says we need to get control of Carol when Leanne goes back. So I think it's made clear that he did put that order to lock her down before he was shot. And now Claire is always going to – she's never going to know. At that first point, she's mad because she knows he's put her under lockdown. And then she learns that he's shot. So she'll never know, or will she, that
– I don't think – and ultimately, I don't think that matters anymore.
Okay.
Like, I don't think –
Well, I was tying that into the question of as to what is going to happen between Frank and – who is Claire really behind?
Right. And again, because ultimately you see her immediately – you know, if she had – and this is where it comes – why there's an interesting character, why this is sort of – I like this moment in the story now, because we end up getting – we end up seeing what Claire's mother thinks of Frank, you know, because she utters the words, I hope he dies.
I love that character. I love that
actress.
Right,
and that's fine. We see her that. The thing when it comes to Claire, and this is where things get really complicated, is that I think Claire, you know, both Frank and Claire still actually care about each other. It just sucks that both of them want this ambition and neither really will let the other one kind of get it. Because they both really do care about each other in their weird, messed up way. I mean, we didn't talk about it, I think it was the episode 3 where they mentioned it, but the one, the scene was either episode 3 or 2. I forget which one it was, but it was basically where she was almost going to sell the house, you know, and do the election thing. They show a scene at the very end of the episode of her, smoking a cigarette. We've talked about in the past about that being the thing her and Frank would do, you know, post whatever, you know, success that they had.
Right.
And she was still doing that and kind of looking very wistfully, very lonely and kind of that. And I think deep down she still kind of cares about this guy, but it just has gone so wrong that she doesn't have a solution. And now that this happens, it's you know, everything aside, she doesn't want this guy to die. Because again, she still cares about it. And it was really, that was what I liked about that moment was that, you know, she could have just not gone back, you know, gone to Dallas and said like she had gone to DC, but never had gone to see Frank or just like gone to the hospital like once. But she, you know, goes there and is the first thing she does is go to the hospital. You know, she still cares. That's, I think it's a telling part.
You know, and also as you were just talking, I kind of realized that this is the real start of the season.
Yeah.
You know, the first three episodes we had were necessary. Maybe it could have been done a lot tighter. But this is season four.
Yeah.
What happens post assassination attempt?
Yeah, and that's sort of the thing is that I agree is that this is the kickoff for the season. I almost wish that they had, you know, again, we talk about pacing and everything else. If we had had an episode with Lucas, maybe this would have been way more fun and interesting, but we are where we are. And yeah. I'm glad it's kicking off now because that, I will say some of the stuff we did learn about was of course the, and we have it in our notes here. I learned where Leanne stands now. And I'm glad to see where Leanne stands.
How so?
Well, you know, we talked about earlier that we talked about like Leanne only cared about money and things like that. But she may, you know, when they offered her the campaign manager thing, you know, all that stuff, whatever, she mentions to Claire that she had talked about making a difference and changing things. And ultimately, you know, if it was about a paycheck, they could offer her, you know, the White House could offer her way more money than Claire ever could. And she makes that point. She says, yeah, they can give me a way better paycheck, but you said this is about making a difference and,
right,
and doing something.
Right.
And it was interesting to see that because I can kind of see, and maybe this is where the parallel could happen. I can see Leanne being very much the Claire version of Stamper.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's your opinion on that?
No, definitely. I've kind of thought that from the very beginning, with her, you know, pulling out the gun in the in her office, that she's. I don't really see her bearing bodies out in New Mexico.
I don't know.
But
Claire hasn't killed anyone yet.
But yeah, she's definitely
body count yet.
She's definitely found, I think. I don't know what exactly it was that Claire did, but she's found the person that I think she could be just as loyal. I think I said this before, that I think she could be just as loyal to Claire as Stamper is to Frank. The
right.
difference is that Frank and Stamper have a long history. And
yeah.
we've only, Leanne and Claire have only just met. But for only have just starting a partnership, Leanne is proving herself to be very loyal to Claire.
Right, and that's sort of the thing that's triggered me is, again, that opening thing of the, you know, you want to make a difference, and then showing the actual research and then figuring out the whole motive of, you know, originally to be divorced and everything else, and again, it's very interesting how all that will turn out. I'm actually very intrigued because there's even some, you know, some things of like Stamper can't go and see Frank.
Oh,
even
yes.
though, you know, that kind of thing, and
he was
visions.
Not happy to be kicked out of that.
There's a lot of things going on that I'm actually curious at how they're all going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
The one I think is, you know, ultimately the one I'm really not concerned with, but just kind of curious is going to be Seth, because I know that's not going to end well for him, especially if you have two fiercely loyal people to the Underwoods either as a concept or as individuals. Seth being the guy that goes to the highest bidder does not bode well unless something happens that, you know, some other force happens.
He's
we'll
definitely just a kind of a wait and see kind of guy, but
yeah.
He, you know, before the assassination, he's meeting with Cynthia Driscoll,
yep.
Dunbar's campaign manager, and talk at the bar, pressuring her, saying, look, you've got to tell me what would be my position in the Dunbar administration. And then yes, now
Goodwin.
And the look when in his reaction when he finds out that Frank has been shot is just completely okay, what do we do? How am I going to handle this? You know, what do we do now? He's thinking about all those things like, oh, I've got a lot to take care of as press secretary.
Which is good. I mean, and I'm glad that he's thinking about that, because again, that's one of the, I mean, the big issue is that he's not loyal, but the strong point is that, you know, and even Stamper says things like that, where he says, like, I recognize talent. You know, he says to Leanne.
Right.
Like, I think Stamper and Leanne could work together, if anything.
As long as their agendas align, yeah.
Right, as long as their agendas align. And I'm glad at least Seth is in very much press secretary. Like, I'll be curious where that goes with the character. Because I do like the fact he's like, you know, if it's double and triple check before you put anything out, you know, and pulling rank and saying, you know, trying to get this in. Because, again, there's so many things that are going to happen in the story. It's going to be very interesting. Again, knowing what I know about history and knowing what I know about this show and how it kind of mirrors our real world, I'm very curious in how the media is going to do things and how characters are going to interact with it. Because there's a lot of questions with Lucas. You know, one, him getting out. Two, him doing this. And you know, there's going to be stories that are going to, you know, things will emerge.
Well, lastly, I think something that we don't really need to spend a whole lot of time on, but I'm curious of what your thoughts are about Dunbar, because she has met with the guy who tried to kill the president. And in this day and age, you know,
yeah.
Wow.
It's going to be interesting, because the problem is that, and this is the problem with the series, is that I happen to just sort of scroll through the text of seeing the future episode descriptions and titles and things like that on Netflix. And I kind of, I gleaned a little bit of information from that, not a whole lot, but a little bit. And I know that probably won't end well for her. Because it's going to be, you met with him, he said, what now? And you didn't report this? And then she's calling, you know, other people in the department of stuff. And
yes, saying, she calls, like, the new attorney general, and she, right. She's admitted to the, at this point when she calls her, what she's doing is she's admitting to breaking the rules of the witness protection, which is controlled by the Department of Justice. She's former attorney general. That is not good. Already.
No, it's all gonna bite her in the ass. I mean, everything's gonna bite everyone in the ass. That's kind of the. You know, again, I said before, it's House of Cards, and that's the joke. That's the joke, but that's the reason why they call it what they call it, because it's a House of Cards, and all comes.
Somebody's gonna fall.
Yeah, I'll calm somebody down. So it's gonna bite her in the ass. That's just the nature of things.
Yeah,
it sucks, but that's what's gonna happen. The question goes, is this gonna be? You know, how is this gonna bite Frank in the ass? Is it gonna bite Frank in the ass? Is it even going to matter? Is this the thing that brings, you know, Underwood down, or not? Because it's going to come out. There's going to be information. Things are going to happen. People are going to talk about Lucas and how he was doing this, whatever. There'll be people who speak out and all that kind of thing, just because, you know, if you mirror the real world, people are going to go like, there's no people that have heard the story before he went crazy, and they're going to hear him, like, he shot that. And it's like, and then you're going to hear, like, you know, because, again, you question, like, is it really the case?
Yeah.
Is that really not? But no one knows, and you know, it will be interesting to see what the circus becomes of it, and what that means. Because again, there's a lot of stuff that goes down, and it didn't bode well for Lucas. But the question is, you know, will someone else take up the mantle?
Will be
to destroy Frank Underwood.
I would love to know if you have any more predictions at this point, because you're doing so good, or, you know, only.
I mean, the problem is, like I said, I gleaned a little bit of information, so I feel like I'm biased, but I mean, I'm assuming that this isn't the last season.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
Okay. With that in mind, and knowing that we have at least one more season.
But we do have a new showrunner, so we're not going to have. It may not be the typical House of Cards. We don't know what the style will be like.
Right. I mean. Because the question goes, is not like, I mean, we have a new showrunner, sure, so maybe a new episode, and maybe a new kind of thing, but it's not like we're going to have...
It can't be that different.
It can't be that different, like, unless you're, I mean, unless you, you know, I mean, maybe that, you know, maybe Frank does die at the end. And if Frank dies at the end, then cool. And then we follow the story of whoever's next president, which seems kind of weird to have that. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like that would be, like you would do a spinoff series.
How could you have it without Kevin Spacey?
Right, exactly. And I mean that. I mean that in like a, it's almost like you bring up like, you know, like, it's like having Breaking Bad. Like you get Better Call Saul.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a different show. It can exist in the same universe, but you can't have Breaking Bad without, you know.
And the same with the UK show. I mean, how do you have the UK show without Frank Urquhart?
Right, exactly. You can't do that. Like, it doesn't happen. Like, you can have a show within that universe. That's totally fine. But you just can't have that show without that really big of a main character, unless you're doing an entirely different show and you somehow present that. Like, maybe, you know, but yeah. It's hard. So, in the end, I see that Lucas' thing will come to light. They will probably be people who will question it. It'll always be in the back of the mind as a conspiracy theory kind of thing. But it'll be almost at the point where we talk about the Kennedy assassination, where we people say like lone gunman did this, like no, it was this, you know, or like the moon landing at the end of the day, where it's
he
just
did it for Jodie Foster.
Oh yeah, I did it for Jodie Foster. It's going to be very much the normal. The normal kind of viewpoint is going to be that this man was crazy. Mm-hmm. But there's always going to be those people who are going to say Lucas is right and everything else, who will be conspiracy theorists about it. But I don't think anything's going to come to light of it. I don't think, because I don't know. But again, I'm curious as to how that'll play out. But I think it's going to play out not in the way that is going to reveal anything really meaningful. I think it's just going to play out in a more political way and almost mirror something else, but it won't cause anyone to lose anyone important to lose an office. It may make, you know, certain secondary side characters will fall to, you know, will fall down. But I think that's about it, really.
Hmm. Yep.
That's my prediction for now.
Yeah. Well, good. I wish I could make predictions. I would like to, I would actually like to at some point, you know, we'll get someone who has watched all of the UK shows, and maybe that that person and I could do an episode so you don't get spoiled on it. But I do want to talk about how, because we don't know how this story will end as opposed to the UK one, but I don't know how they would work around to bring the two stories back together at this point. I don't know. I don't see it, but I, anyways, I would, I'm very, very, as sad as I am about the show ending, it must end at some point. And
it has to. You
right.
Know, you, if you,
I'm I looking mean, forward you, to it.
Yeah. I think I am too, for many reasons, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cause I want to see how this all resolves, but
I do too.
So, Roberto, where can people find you these days?
Oh, I'm easy to find. Just find me on Twitter at Vincent404. And, of course, if you want to catch anything else I tend to do, head on over to CosmicRadio.tv.
Yes. Speaking of CosmicRadio.tv,
yes.
I wanted to point out that you have, well, I've said it before, you've got multiple shows on there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, I really think, fit in with the categories on the podcast awards coming up.
It's a very, very, very weird plug way, but make a long story short, actually, my primary podcast that I do, my so-called 8-Bit Life, this year we're actually kind of trying to get a nomination for the podcast awards, and from April 15th through the 30th, if after you've nominated whatever British Tech Network shows are up for whatever things.
Oh, there's so many categories, and there's so many British Tech Network shows that fall great in this category. And I think our sort of community, we've seen a lot of these results and things happen with the show. And I would strongly encourage people to go check out podcastawards.com and nominate your favorite shows.
For sure, totally. We're trying to get the my other podcast, 8-Bit Life, is trying to get the entertainment category personally. But you know, so April 15th to 30th is the award show. So if you want to support me personally, you can do that.
Of your shows, you've got several. Which of the so my so-called 8-Bit Life? I know that's definitely
that's the one that's going to be the it's where I'm targeting the entertainment award for, because that sort of makes the most sense, because comedy is kind of a weird category to go up against. And I think entertainment's where we fit within that structure of stuff.
And also, you've got another one that you do with Brent Hughes. That I think people would like. People who like this show are watching would tell
sure,
me.
Sure, of course.
Because you discuss so many different films. And that would be, what, television and entertainment?
Yeah, I could. But we may not have the rules for that one, per se. But okay. If you do like television stuff, you actually do just want to watch that kind of stuff, head on over to youtube.com/cinematography. We actually kind of need as many subs as we can there. That's sort of where we're putting a lot of the content there, and it's just sort of for that. But it's also a cosmetic TV, so it's not going to be there. But it's not going to – I mean, it's going to be there as well, but – hit that YouTube subscribe button.
You want to go to YouTube. Okay.
You go both ways. In other words, you can watch the content there, but after you've done that, just hit that subscribe button because, again, it validates us. It makes us feel like people are caring, even though, you know, it's a silly number of subscribers. Subscriber is a very silly number, but it's a very much a meaningful number to metrics and things like that. Yeah, that's all I do. That's what I'm doing. What about you, Jackie? Where do people find you, though?
I'm Jackie Hearn, 81 on Twitter, and lately I'm not really kind of pushing this too much, but I've been live streaming on Twitch Creative. I'm trying to move more into from the typical puppets that I've done before. I want to make some claymation type puppets, and I'm going to be streaming that, the process of that. So if you're, I don't know, interested in crazy, ridiculous shenanigans with clay puppets, so you know, check me out on Twitch. That's twitch.com/JackieHearn.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you want to catch more of our stuff here at the British Tech Network, you can head over to BritishTechNetwork.com, and I think we're there at the House of Cards show.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the little icon that you see over there on the screen. Yeah, just look for that.
Yep.
All right.
Till next time.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.